Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. And that's Love Me Two Times by The Doors. Jim Morrison and The Doors passed away on this day in 1971. We're about to talk to Tybalt Johnson. Last week when we did our City Paper story, one of the lead stories there was called Longtime Popper, Tybalt Johnson Mixes Dance with Personal Philosophy. I read this and said to Mark Underwood, one of my producers, oh, man, I'm going to meet this cat. We have to interview him, and here he is in the studio, Tybalt. And Tybalt, welcome. Good to have you here.
Hi. Thank you.
So it's good to be here. I've seen you, but never talked to you. I've seen you like at Red Emma's when you're working there and doing your thing there, but I've never really, we never met before this.
Yeah. Yeah, I was really surprised when I got the message. I was like, definitely. I would love to talk.
You know? So, where do you begin? I mean, I'm going to begin just because I don't only know but so much, and I saw a couple of videos of your early popping that you did, and I saw stuff. You know, I read the article in City Paper, but so let's take a step backwards. In the paper, they talked about they kind of saw you at Art Apartheid, which we've been doing a lot of work with.
Mm-hmm. That's an incredible engagement right there.
Yeah.
That's an incredible, like, collection of people. Mia Loving approached me about it, and I was like everything I do, I was really nervous. I was like, what? You want me to talk? I was like, I'm almost like, yes, I would love to. And then for the longest time, I was like, what do I even say? You know? Because panel discussions... I had just recently been to a panel discussion, and I was blown away by the level of expertise and knowledge of the people that were on the panel and the years of work they had put in and the things they knew about the topics they were talking about. And I was sitting there thinking about, all right, we're talking about the black experience, we're talking about money and funding, and we're talking about a lot of big topics. We're talking about artists. You know, what is art? Like, how does art get into the community, community involvement? This really big web of topics that are very important and have a deep impact on our day-to-day lives as artists or as even regular people. And I'm sitting there thinking, like, okay, what could I possibly tell a whole room, a church full of people, because it's 2640 spaces. It's
right.
Gutted out church. It's like, what could I tell all these people? It's like this whole idea, like, who am I to think I'm going to tell somebody something? And they're going to go, like, be like, oh, yeah, I'm going to do that, you know, or I have the answer, you know. So I had to figure out what could I possibly add. It helped me. It helped me realize that, like, the only thing that I think my life has been leading me toward and the thing that I've been discovering I'm good at doing, it's something very interpersonal, you know, because, like, everywhere I look, everyone's tackling a lot of systemic issues, functional, tangible issues. Things that involve action and work, things that are extremely structured, you know? Most of my work and my exploration of discovering myself and how people are affected by things has revolved around the inverse aspect of that, internal, the internal journey, the internal intangible things that you can't touch that are exemplified through our behaviors, outside behaviors, or our motivations, you know, the questions we need to ask. And it got even more complicated. I was like, how do I connect that to being an artist? And for me, it keeps coming back to one simple thing. You know, if anything's going to be built or work for an individual, they have to have a sense of self-worth. And that was my whole topic that I brought to the discussion at Art Apartheid, or I attempted to, you know. Mm-hmm. It's a work in progress to get a level of speaking where what you're feeling is making sense coming out of your mouth. That's probably why I dance so much. It makes a lot more sense when I move.
You started out as a painter, as a painting student at MICA, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the art and expressing that is in you, but something happened that made you kind of take a different tack in life.
Oh,
right?
Man. Yeah. I spent most of my life deciding between science or art. I've always been very, very artistically talented, and I've always been very interested in seeing how things break down and work. So my family, they always wanted to, like, inspire me to go the distance with whatever it is and do really well, be successful. And I eventually decided to myself, I think I was like 15, I was like, I am going to go to art college. I'm going to win scholarships. I'm going to go there. And that was the only thing I knew. I didn't know what was going
to
happen.
You knew you were going to do it. Where were you in high school? Just curious. Where'd you go to high school here?
I went to Patasko High School.
Oh, up in the county.
Yep. Yeah, yep. Yeah, for the art magnet.
Oh, yeah, right.
I had a hard time getting into Carver at the time. And Carver was supposed to be the place to be.
Right.
And after I found out all the issues I was having at Carver, and it had nothing to do with my level of skill, my guidance counselor at the time went and just ripped them a new, you know, he ripped them apart, and he did his thing. He was like, they're going to accept you. And I was like, F them, I'm going to go to Patasko. I'm going to go to this art man over here. That was a weird choice, but it worked out because it was what needed to happen, you know, in retrospect.
So what happened to you as a painter when you got to college and moved you off into this kind of direction of dancing, of popping, of the philosophy that you had to begin to embrace all these last few years? What made that shift?
Man.
That's a big shift after what you said you wanted to do since you were 15, right? And then, boom, you go somewhere else.
Yeah, when I decided I wanted to be a painter at 15, I had all these plans to, like, change the world with my art or say something. Uh-huh. And then I got to MICA, and I was surrounded by brilliant artists, brilliant access, incredible amounts of access that was just, like, a little overwhelming, and brilliant amounts of, like, freedom for myself to make decisions. Like, there was nobody to ask what to do when. There was no real consequence at the time. You know, you're sitting on scholarship money, you're sitting in a dorm, you're just in adolescence. I kind of went nuts. I was just like, I thought about it and I was like, I don't really have something to say yet. I'm in all these classes. Now, mind you, a lot of my classes at MICA, I actually really enjoyed them. I really enjoyed the professors. It just wasn't working for me. I was very intrinsically driven to explore all these other wild things that had nothing to do with, like, being at art school. But the irony of it was being at MICA in the way I was provided me the space and the opportunity and the access to explore those things. I decided to myself, I was like, I'm going to do all these things with myself. And I got very physically involved and very physically active, you know. I came out of my shell for the first time. I'm a very shy person, but I became very, very explorative in, like, learning how to talk to people and watch people watching, because my art was about how we express ourselves or how we communicate gesturally.
Huh. So it's almost like you went from painting pictures of people gesturing and using that to doing it yourself.
Pretty much. I mean, that and painting landscapes, that's about all I did, was draw people and paint landscapes. And, yeah, but I people watched constantly, and I was like, there's something to us. There's something to people, something to communication. And I was really perplexed by something at that age. I got to school, and I felt really, everything felt really unfair. I was like, why am I here? And there's all these people I know that should be here that I knew when I was younger that aren't here. And I questioned constantly, what is talent? I wanted to know what talent was. And that was a challenge to me. So I was like, if I can do art like this, if I can create images like this, and why can't I make music or write a story or write poetry or dance?
So have you always been popping? That was always an art form for you? Dance mm-hmm. form? No.
Not at all.
So that was also new to you?
That was brand new to me. Like, I loved looking at it. I thought it was cool.
You never did it. You never.
No, I was the first time I started dancing, I was doing ballroom dance, because if my thoughts were about human connection and communication, mm-hmm. so I'm taking these little ballroom dance sessions at MICA, and I'm like dancing at parties and having, like, I'm watching people socially, and I'm being involved in it too, and experiencing how it feels, and I'm like living this life, but I'm paying all this attention. I'm writing down notes. I'm constantly writing about this stuff. And I got inspired by a couple of different people that went to that school and started thinking about, like, hip hop. So I started like going to breakdance club, and I started meeting, like, friends that I still have now that would take me to like this spot called in Federal Hill called Sky Lounge. You know? And I started going to this spot, Joe Squared. It used to be this Korean restaurant. The closed down, became this bar, and it had a dance floor. So I started going there, and they would let me in because at the time I didn't drink. and I was underage. But like around a lot of the bars in the area that would let kids in, like that was the only bar that would let me in that was underage. And my drink was ginger ale and orange juice, and I would just practice on the dance floor by myself. Before I started having parties there and stuff, it was just like I just was looking for places to explore myself. I would go to the piano room in the Meyerhoff building every day after I went to the dance studio and just play piano every day. You know, I had just like this whole little schedule of things I would do.
Do you still paint? You stopped.
I still draw here and there. I still love to paint. I just don't very often.
So one of the things that's so fascinating to me about what you've done here, because I mean, the world of poppin' is just so interesting to
Big.
It's huge.
It's worldwide.
Across the world, it's huge, right?
It's worldwide. And the irony of it is, one of the people that first inspired me to become a popper, like, I saw three videos. I saw a video of one of my current mentors, like, hands down, in my, like, from where I'm standing, when I've seen the best popper on the planet, the best popping teacher, and his name is Slick Dog. He's the leader of my crew, G-Style. I saw this video release of this energy ball that travels visually through their body way back when. I saw a video of his group called Electric Boogaloos. I saw a video of this guy from France named Salah. I had no idea I would meet and know or be connected to any of these people a couple years later and be involved in this this culture that was so huge, you know? Yeah, it's really big, you know? And we got G-Style out here in Baltimore. You know, my man King Mike, I was just talking to him the other day. He's one of the people one of the brothers I met along the way, just etching out this lifestyle, you know, going where I was drawn.
So you took this dance, this art form, this dance, became a popper, and started really practicing, working on it. But something else was occurring at the same time. You said, just like a moment ago, you said you were doing all these other things, and you were reading, and you were working on the piano, and you've taken this art form, but you've kind of layered it in with other philosophical content. I'm sure, just from hearing a little bit you talked about before we saw this conversation officially, that none of it's fully. You're not done yet.
No.
Right. So, but talk about the formation. So, what is it? All these pieces that came together for you that goes beyond just the simple, not simple, but goes beyond just the art form itself of popping. You know what I'm saying? So other things are happening to you right now that you're putting out there with your performance.
Like the journey involved. You know. There's this one quote by Martha Graham, who is famous for the development of like modern dance. And I'm going to paraphrase it because I don't know it by heart. But she says, move as if every movement you make is like a record of a series of movements that follows you, that's a record of every motion you've ever made your entire life, all the way back to your birth, through all of your ancestors, through everybody that's come together to make you, like the whole story. Everything that's happened before you came together to make you. And all of this is movement, all the way back to the source. So I think about it like that. And when I dance, it's like everything leading up to that moment is coming out in the dancing, in the motion. The people I've met, you know, when I left school, that inspired me and started opening me up to things I've never thought about.
Mm-hmm.
That people I've met every day, like in this city, it's been an increasing type of experience, but it all centers around like understanding and transforming messages that come through the heart. You know, like in retrospect, in the language that I have now, that's the easiest way I could put it. You know, what I didn't know was going on is I was being impacted and influenced and learning things about life that are much deeper than words can express, you know? And then eventually I decided I'm going to use this dance that I love, this art form that already connects people, that already has a culture around it. I'm going to use it as a medium because I didn't have a message. I was like, now I have a message, you know?
Right.
And every single, just being myself and living the journey of life is what gives me what I need to do this. Everything from the birth of my son to meeting the mother of my child, you know, loving her, like the love that we've had, our interactions, the women that raised me, you know, the men throughout my life who have been examples of something, you know, the myriad people out there who have touched my heart and don't even know, who think that I'm something big and special, but they have no idea that, like, I'm just a mirror. You know, I'm in awe of the swelling of their heart. I'm just reflecting their heart swell, you know, when they want to give me, like, any type of positive, like, reinforcement. I accept it, but it's like, you gotta realize that, like, I am extremely empathic, and that, like, the success of my ability to express and entertain and move someone is completely it's completely, like, intrinsically connected to their ability to feel, and their ability to be not unafraid to show that they feel. This whole idea of, like, empathy and vulnerability, it's really important in day-to-day life in our culture as we know it. And it's been programmed out of us through the expectations we have in society.
Yeah, it makes me think of this when you're talking about Martha Graham. I was thinking about Catherine Dunham, you know, talking about the dancer.
The name, yes.
After the program, I'm going to have to give you some stuff.
Yeah.
She was called the Black Mother of Dance in America. She created the first African-American dance company. She was an anthropologist who then studied the diasporic dance, then brought it to the stage, and she was just
absurd. I remember, yes.
Yeah, so some of the stuff you're saying reminds me of stuff that she had said in the past. And But you said that you read this book, Acrobats of the Gods, Dance and Transformation, which is this philosophy and psychoanalytical piece, but it's more than that because Jung was so deep in this notion of universal consciousness and how we're all connected,
right?
Yeah,
that was a big part of it.
What was it about this book that did this twist on you?
It was a gift on my birthday in 2010 from a friend of mine that I know from college who, when we met, we were like, I want to dance. She was like, I want to dance too. And actually, yeah, she was one of the people that started bringing me over to Sky Lounge back in the day. I started reading it, and it started making me think about one particular thing. It's called kinesthetics. It talked about the feeling of the body within the body, the thing that allows us to close our eyes and put our hand behind our head and know where our hand is moving and know what it's doing. And I was so inspired by this. It helped me teach better. It helped me dance better, you know. And then a year later, I started having experiences where I was opening up to completely new and grander aspects of life. Some would call it spiritual awakening. Some would call it rites of passage. Some would call it knowing the self. Like all of these verbose terms. Whatever the case is, I started getting interested in asking questions about things that you don't often think about if you don't think about it, you know? And I started seeing how that was very intrinsically connected to my relationship with my body. There's this giant facade going around that you are not your body. That, like, oh, I'm a spirit with a body. Or I am my mind, not my body. Mind over matter. Well, I've learned from my exploration that mind is matter. They're inseparable. That your inner body, the feeling of yourself from within, that's your soul acting through your body. And that knowing these things and using your mind as a tool, you know, but letting the heart follow, like these are things I've learned from exploring from things like that book, you know, from sources like that source, for example. The books in and of themselves, they're more like markers. Mm-hmm. For as much as I learn, they're more just telling me where I'm at. And what really brings me forward in life is my explorations and being vulnerable to those I love and what I learn from our interactions and what I learn from day-to-day interactions with other people and the things I'm studying at the time. Very advanced concepts, maybe spirituality, maybe philosophy, maybe psychology, maybe the body, maybe ancient history, all of these things have no substance and no value whatsoever until I apply what I've learned or look at it through a space of my everyday interactions with my heart and with those I love.
We're about to take a brief break in our conversation here. We're coming right back. And on our way to break, we're hearing Break On Through by The Doors. Jim Morrison of The Doors passed away on this day in 1971.
Night divides a day. Try to run, try to hide. Break on!
Steiner, and you're listening to your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. And that's Street Fighting Man by the Rolling Stones. Brian Jones of the Rolling Stones passed away on this day in 1969. So it kind of built for you this kind of this thing you call the art of the catalyst?
Yeah, that's a prime example of what I'm talking about. We have no idea how powerful the messages are that come through us. And through knowing the people that I've known and just having people, the people that are in my life, you know, the only thing I do is observe and draw connection and then map it out visually, you know, because, like, I've been observing long enough. So it all started when I had very recently met the now mother of my child. We fell in love, Nicole and Norman, and we were sharing our dreams of, like, all the things that we, like, want to do with each other, like with each other, that, like, we want to do for the community, that we want to do separately, like our goals, and we wanted to support each other in those things. And the name came up eventually, Gifted Unity, and I was like, I just want to connect people, like, there's this thing going on that connects us, and I can see it, and I can see it in action, and I want to take it on. You know, I want to embrace it.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was a very wishy-washy concept. I had no idea what to do with it. And she would always tell me, like, you got to make this tangible. It doesn't, like it's, there's nothing that it connects to. And I was like, oh, I don't want to make it into something that the establishment's going to eat it up. It's going to become just something else. It's going to become. I was young, you know, like a lot younger than I am now. I'm still young.
Yeah, right.
I got
right,
some
right.
time left. You know,
you do.
Eventually, later on, I'm having a conversation with her and a mutual friend one day, and we're talking about the black experience in America. And I asked myself, this is how Art of the Catalyst started, because I already had notes upon notes about, like, different spiritual concepts, philosophies from all different cultures. All of this stuff is, like, it was so verbose, I had given it a break. And I started just observing and asking questions and starting from there again. And I said, if I were a society and I wanted to create a specific type of human being and I wanted them to behave and act a specific type of way, what would I have to control? And that's why I got the first formula for the Art of the Catalyst, a system that helps somebody understand how they've been affected by their life, how their identity is intrinsically connected to the ways in which they identify with the world around them. And then it started off as me trying to figure out how to make a certain human being, me trying to reverse engineer the process of what we call programming, generational programming. So I was like, if I have control over someone's input and output and their body, mind, spirit, etc., the things that they're exposed to and the things that they let out, their physical environment, the way they live in their house, all the way out to the earth itself, every little microcosm within that. I mean, for me, it's like the whole universe. That's a long conversation now. And then that also.
We can make that part two.
Yeah, part two. It's part one. And they're connected in a triangle, these three things, with their social environment, which it's popular to call that a cipher. So everything from their family, their close friends, their acquaintances, the people in their neighborhood. So all of these three things are intrinsically connected. You can't change one without changing the other two. But in the center, there's a person. And if that person changes, all three change, like a generator.
Right.
So you can take a look at these different aspects of your life and say, this is what my identity looks like to me. And then there's two other formulas. All these principles all these things that just started developing from that and from my continued expression in life and choosing love over other things, choosing my art and sticking with that and continuing to observe and take notes of. It's like there's two more shape-based formulas that came out of it, and all these things have come out of
so,
it.
So one thing I thought about when I saw the name of your son, I thought about how that kind of, we always make statements to our children, one way or the other, and then they begin to make their own statements and make statements about us and themselves. Mm-hmm. But you all named your son Lotus Biko.
Yes, we did.
Right?
We named him Lotus Biko.
Lotus Biko. That's a very powerful name.
Well, his full name is long.
How long is it, man?
It's Lotus Biko Mupore Adam Johnson.
What's Mupore?
Mupore is...
Lotus, we know, is this Buddhist symbol and the plant. Biko, well, Stephen Biko, the South African revolutionary. And
you
what
got
is,
that one easy. All right, so his mother, Nicola, her family's from South Africa and Namibia. So she's got a long-running history of all sorts of incredible figures in her family that were like intrinsically involved in a lot of civil rights over there. Mupore is a name given to him that's from an elder on his father's side from Namibia.
Her father's side.
Yeah, her father's side. Excuse me. Her father's side.
Right.
Adam is the name of her mother's father. So you know, he got names passed down from the middle, either side of his family from his African heritage. And then Johnson's my last name. Biko, all right, so we named him Lotus one day. It came to both of us. And then 6 months after he was born, my family's calling him Lotus. Everybody's calling him Lotus. And she calls him one day and she says, I'm changing his name to Biko. And I'm like, what? You can't just do that. And she's like, I've been planning this since before I met you to change. I was like, okay, so how about we just hyphenate it? Because I was like, you just want to do that because of Steve Biko. She was like, no, it's a strong name. I was like, I know what it means. So we're going to call him Lotus Biko. And that's stuck. You know, now his name is Lotus Biko.
That's beautiful. How old is he?
He's every bit his name that he is.
How old is he?
He's 15 months right now. He's born on March 15th. So he's a little bit over a year.
The Ides of March.
Yeah.
The Ides of March.
He is an incredible child.
So in this short time we have today, but we'll come back and do more because I'm finding this fascinating. Tell me about the performance that's coming up on July 3rd and what people are going to feel, see, and experience when you're on the stage. What's happening? What's that going
to
be?
That's a good question. I'd like to know myself.
Okay, nobody would know better than you.
I'm playing.
At least by July 3rd.
Yeah, in the moment, right?
Uh-huh.
I'm collaborating with a fellow artist of mine. It's funny. I was going to propose for Borders, Boundaries, and Barricades when I found out about it. But things have been increasing in my personal life at a higher rate, in my professional life at a higher rate, my work life at a higher rate. And I didn't get a chance to put anything in. So then I'm working at Emma's one day, and my friend walks in, and he's doing something. He's doing a performance involving the music that he makes with someone else. And they're putting together a musical piece, and they're getting a lot of moving artists together. So other dancers that I know, and some of them very good friends, we're all going to come together, and we're having a moment of on the spot, immediate self expression in the form of movement, in response to the stimuli, you know. So what you're going to get that night is going to be a mixture of a lot of different energies, avatars, characters, archetypes, all through motion, you know. It's going to speak through us. Now, I don't know if I can speak for anybody else, but that's what happens when you dance. I'm aware there's going to be a musical piece.
That you're doing.
I'm not doing the music this time. The person
You're not popping?
Yeah, I'm collaborating. I'm going to be dancing.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm collaborating as a part of a number of movement artists that are going to be together. I like that. I specialize in performing alone, so it's good when I get to collaborate with people.
Yeah,
it's an incredible experience every time. You know, I love what Lab Bodies does. I love the work they're doing. So anytime I get a chance, I love to be involved.
Yeah, there is something very special happening between Lab Bodies, this art apartheid, other stuff happening, bringing artists together from all across.
Mm-hmm.
There's something explosive that maybe what we call the establishment may not be paying a lot of attention to yet, but something's like bubbling up from the bottom here artistically in this town. You can feel it every time you go to something or walk into a certain place.
Reminds me of this the speech I heard once, it's like that bubbling.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
That's it, you know? That's life. We live in a very interesting time in Baltimore. There's a cipher that's turning over. You know, there's a pattern that's being completed and restarting. So there's an opportunity right now, energetically, in this city to use expression to say things that it would take a million protests to say, you know? Where I see myself at right now is like, I know so many brilliant minds and hearts out here doing brilliant things and faster and in a bigger level and a faster rate. I'm finding myself working with each of these sections, so to speak, of this giant web of hearts and minds that are wanting to break through this mesh, this really thick threshold out here in this city. My bottom was very much a microcosm for the rest of like Western life in America. You're gonna get the entire spectrum of like personalities and political engagements and cross sections interdisciplines, intersectionalities. It's all here. We're at a time right now where things are not in gestation. There's something being born out of everybody's like working together. My whole thing with Gift and Unity was to bring people together. And it's something that I believe happens whether you take it on or not. You know, it's just, it's your choice. Like, are you going to take it on? What are you going to call upon? What, you have hands, like, there are tools. What's going to move these hands, you know, to do the work that you want to do? I'm not sure where it's all headed, but I embrace positioning myself in a place where once I get the opportunity, I can bring so many people that have touched me, you know, in a deep place that I've touched, into the same space at the same time and catalyze from that bigger and better things. You know, it's never like there's never this giant boom and like there it is, it's all done now.
Right, right.
We finally did it. You know, it's like it seems there's this ever present swelling going on, and it's not going to stop. You just got to embrace the fact that the work is always going to need to be done.
Transformation is endless.
Yeah, it's endless.
It doesn't stop. Now, something very powerful is happening, and I really hope. So it's July 3rd, 7 p.m. Right, La Bodega Gallery, 1501 Guilford Avenue. Part of Lab Bodies, Borders, Boundaries, and Barricades. Mm-hmm. This performance art piece happening in Baltimore for a month. It's just amazing. And so July 3rd, Tybalt Johnson will be there. And I can't wait to see it. I've seen pieces of this now, and I was just taken by the piece I read. So, Tybalt, this won't be the last time I'll be on the show. And it was
cool.
Very cool to meet you.
That's, thank you. Thank you, Mark. It's been an honor.
And on the way out of here, You Gotta Move by Mississippi Fred McDowell, who left us on this day in 1972.
You got to move, you got to move, you got to move, child, you got to move. But one day more, get ready, you got to move. You may be high, you may be low, you may be rich, you may be poor, but one and all gets ready.